Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry. Clean feel all day.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
20 seconds to go. Jimmy, the three, off the front of the rim.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
With all due respect to Heat fans, Celtics Warriors would be a much more enjoyable and competitive finals.
The Rich Eisen Show.
What's not likable about the Celtics game?
Get over this hump. It's special.
Today's guests. Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix, Warriors radio analyst Tom Tolbert, columnist for the MMQB Andrew Brandt, and now it's Rich Eisen.
Yes, it is. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Hopefully everybody had a safe Memorial Day weekend and that you're back at your gigs, or you're back at your radio or your television sets or your phones or your tablets, however you consume the Rich Eisen Show. We say hello to you here on this Tuesday, the final day of May of 2022. Hello to our Peacock viewers and our SiriusXM Channel 85 NBC Sports Audio listeners, our Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio friends coast to coast, our Odyssey friends on the app, and our friends on our podcast, where all podcasts can be acquired. We have a lot of friends. Basically what I'm saying, including the guys here in studio. Good to see you, Chris Brockman. How are you, sir?
Hey, Rich. I'm just exhausted.
Okay, good to see you. DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts back at his post. How are you, sir?
Good. How you doing?
Good to see you, Mike. Good to see you, TJ Jefferson, lighting the candle. What's going on over there?
You know, it's always a pleasure to be seen, Rich, and heard.
Is this a low-energy situation over here? What's going on?
Well, you know, Brockman, he exhausted a lot of energy rooting his team onto the finals. Okay. That's why he's exhausted.
All right, and Mike's all flown out, but I'm glad that you're here. Good to see you. And congratulations to you, Christopher, and the rest of the Boston Celtics fans out there. Good to see. I know, right?
I'm just, it was tough to even feel joy. I was just exhausted and relieved.
Well, I mean, Sunday night. But you're also a New England sports fan, so it's very tough to feel joy. You could just stop your sentence right there.
I don't understand that. How are they not happier?
Unless they're unhappy. Officiating, disrespect, whatever, what have you.
It makes no sense.
It's all bad. It's all bad.
It makes no sense you have that much success and you're. Like, I haven't won a title since 95, and look how happy I am. Like,
I know that.
You know, like, come on, Chris.
And the Celtics and the Warriors, that's going to be a hell of a matchup. And we pour one out for Miami Heat fans. Despite Jimmy Butler's best efforts in games 6 and 7, one of the greatest games 6 and 7 an individual has ever posted on, you know, we might learn, one leg, right? And how incredible he was in game 6 to force a game 7. We were basically, you know, having fun that, you know, LeBron James is not walking through that door for game number 6, and that Jimmy Butler walked in the door and played the role of LeBron James, damn near coming up with a 50-piece in Boston to force a game 7. A game 7 in which the Celtics were dominant until the Heat popped a run on them to make it a 3-point game, only to have the Celtics take control of game 7, only to have the Heat take control back and actually have the ball in Jimmy Butler's hands, down 2 with mere seconds to go, forcing it one, you know, chip by chip, possession by possession, to make it a 4-possession game, then a 3-possession game, then a 2-possession game. And then finally, it was a 1-possession game, and the Celtics had the ball, couldn't put it in the basket, and now had a transition opportunity with Jimmy Butler leading it. And he pulled up for 3 for the YOLO shot. The shot that, if it had gone through the net, and again, this is the stuff we talk about, you know, with the Buckner play and the Bartman grab and the miracle on ice. is that we assume like that would have been the end of it, but it wouldn't have been the end of it. There still would have been time left on the clock. Right. It's not like there was no time left. Everyone's like, well, we've been talking about this shot for 50 years, unless, you know, the Celtics got the ball back and scored.
Right.
And they were going to get the ball back.
There was still 17 seconds.
There were, and they had a timeout, and there's, you know, the Heat were out of timeouts and looked like they were out of chances until they had a chance, and here comes Jimmy Butler. And we're showing a shot of it right here. I mean, Al Horford's backing up, and Butler could have gone right by him for an and one or gotten to the line. Instead, he pulls up for three with 17 and a half to go. And from my position on the couch, as somebody who wanted, you know, my son to be happy, but for you and everyone else who's a Celtic fan to be miserable, Chris, sorry to say.
I understand.
I honestly thought, what's he doing? I thought it in real time. This is not a second guess. No, I didn't.
When he pulled up, you didn't think it was going in?
Because I saw it looked it looked like he pulled up and didn't have his legs under him.
Yeah.
You know, his jump
everything.
Shot. It looked. I know he had been making everything, but I just saw the way he went up, and then when it wound up short, it just looked like he didn't have his feet completely under him, which is totally understandable with him. As I said, maybe playing on one leg and played every second of Game 7.
Yeah.
As valiant an effort, as diehard an effort, as remarkable an effort, you know, for you Heat fans, I'd wish he had taken it to the basket.
Well, no matter what, even if he had, he would have got a whistle. Yeah. He would have
gone to the line for
they
two.
Had been getting every call that entire game.
I have no problem with Butler pulling up for that because Jimmy Butler, like you said, he played all 48 and 7.
Yes.
He played 46 minutes
and
in
made
game
everything.
Six.
And he made everything.
They're not there without Jimmy Butler.
Correct.
So, and also, I think one thing you didn't mention is, yes. All those minutes, that might have been Jimmy going, I don't have the energy for overtime.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I don't want 5 more minutes.
Don't have 5 more minutes in me.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone can look. That's name any team superstar that carried you. And if they pull up and take the shot, that's when you go, okay.
Let me just try to end
this. So I personally, but I'm not a Heat fan, so I don't know how they feel. But just as a basketball fan, I was like, okay.
Heat fans wouldn't have saw it because half of them left the arena already.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that game was almost over. I mean, when Strus made that three to make it a one possession game, I audibly, you know, I screamed and got off the couch. You know, that's when it became really real. The rest of the time was, this is a nice try by the Heat here. But when Strus made the three to make it that 2-point game and the Celtics didn't score down the on the other end, that's when it got
Marcus
real,
Smart
real fast.
Wide open shots.
Real fast.
That's
got
the other
real,
thing.
Real fast.
Marcus Smart took like your last 4 or 5 shots.
Well, Tatum was getting doubled and he made the smart pass to the open man, and the open man needs to make the shot.
But I feel like that would have been the story had the Celtics not won. It was like, why is Marcus Smart taking the last 4 or 5 shots of the game for Boston?
Had the Celtics not won, we would have been talking about one of the worst.
It would have been a different narrative
blown opportunities
on Tatum.
Of all time.
Oh, man. Up 13 with 3 minutes to go. Like, how do you not close that out?
But it happened.
It
congratulations. Al Horford is no longer the oldest or the most tenured player in the history of the NBA to not make the finals. That person is now whoever's the oldest person on the Knicks. And and the Warriors and Celtics are going to be a great matchup. I can't wait for it.
Where's this Al Horford in Philly? That's my question. Now, I thought the man's career was over when he played for the Sixers, and now look at him. Looks like he'd go 5 more years.
He looks terrific.
Jeez.
He looks terrific. And we'll be talking about this with Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated and Tom Tolbert, who calls the action locally for the Warriors and has a radio presence up there in the Bay Area. He'll be joining us. Those are the first two guests of our program today. And then there's this story you may have missed. You may have missed this story because it happened on late Friday of Memorial Day weekend. And anytime anything comes out late Friday on a Memorial Day weekend, it's done because a sports team doesn't want people to know about it. Or a sports league doesn't want people to know about it. That's why Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, who starts this Peacock Palooza every single day on NBC Sports on Peacock, he kept on saying, hey, if there's going to be any news about the league and Deshaun Watson, it's going to come out late Friday. Even though in this day and age, you know, with social media and Twitter and everything else, and you see everything on your phones, it's very difficult.
It's different.
It's very difficult for people to miss anything. But, you know, we all go on with our lives best we can. And So this was announced on Friday. And this is the Lakers have a new head coach.
Hey.
And this is a franchise that makes announcements. They make everything big. Everything's big with this team. But for some reason, on Friday, the Woj bomb comes out, and the Lakers hire a new head coach. And his name is Darvin Ham. Now, fans of the NBA, certainly from back in the day, recognize the name. Certainly fans of the Detroit Pistons recognize that name. He won a championship as a player with those Detroit Pistons. And so Darvin Ham is now the head coach of the Lakers. He's spent 9 years with Mike Budenholzer, the current head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, the for 10 more days or two more weeks, defending champion Milwaukee Bucks. Their reign will come to an end, either in Boston or Golden State. And he came with Budenholzer from Atlanta to Milwaukee, won a championship there. And you could, you know, make a case that the Lakers are spinning their wheels because this is not a name head coach. And the Lakers are a name franchise. And you could make this case that he is somebody that took the job because others aren't interested in. Where's Nick Nurse? He's not walking through that door. Doc Rivers, Quinn Snyder, somebody else's coach who's under contract, I understand. They're not walking through that door. So why Darvin Ham? Now, on the flip side of it, all you have to do about, well, he's not a name head coach, and this is not going to work out, and, you know, how's it going to possibly work out? Certainly when LeBron James is their best player and their healthiest player, and he's pushing 40, right?
Yeah.
And Westbrook is Westbrook, and this is not going to work out. Darvin Ham's going to be the guy to figure this thing out, really? Well, he comes highly recommended from Giannis himself. Giannis himself loves the guy. Giannis himself was talking about how he takes no BS. And this is going to be a terrific hire. Congratulations. LeBron James tweeting out, I believe, from France, where he went to the Liverpool-Real Madrid Champions League final. And so damn excited. Congrats and welcome, Coach D. Ham. Hashtag Lake Show. LeBron likes it. And then I guess here's another aspect of it. On the positive side of things is take a look at the Celtics head coach. Anybody ever hear him? Who had heard of Ime Udoka? Who thought that guy was in over his head on January 1st of this year? A lot of people. Ton of people. Look who's there now.
500.
Look who's there now, no longer known as Mr. Neil Long, right?
That's how
although
I know.
Although some of her videos went viral celebrating the Celtics Eastern Conference Championship. So, you know, if, just take a look at people saying that Joe Torre, when he got hired, he's a retread. Who the hell is he? And then, of course, he went on an incredible stretch. The one thing that I'm hearing about and reading about that gives me some positive thoughts about this for you Laker fans out there is it appears Darvin Ham got a 4-year deal, one more than Frank Vogel got. Okay. And apparently he got, according to Mark Stein on his Substack, great Mark Stein, he got assurances that Kurt Rambis is not allowed to be in any planning meetings.
Oh.
Yes. So one of the Rambi has got a butt out.
Interesting. That's very interesting. And I told you a conversation I had this weekend, Rich.
Yeah, that is.
Well, I don't want to talk about that on air, but that was very interesting.
That there is apparently some meddling that took place.
You don't say.
According to Mark Stein, buzz in the coaching circles over the weekend, Ham has been promised the autonomy to pick his coaching staff and is said to have received assurances that Lakers senior advisor Kurt Rambis will not be a regular presence in coaching meetings like he was with Vogel. So he's going to get to do it his way, with his guys, his people, And to me, that's an indication of the Lakers understanding what may have not worked with Vogel and handing it over. And or they're admitting they're kind of over a barrel. Roster-wise, franchise-wise. And here's a guy that they like and they are going to give the opportunity to. Now then, what is his plan for Westbrook? Because Westbrook's not going anywhere, I don't think, based on his contract.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be there for 1 year.
Opt in.
And what's he going to do? Is he, can he have a seance with whatever injury ghost hangs over Anthony Davis? That's the plan for 1 year. But how did Ham get to this gig? And what challenges does he face? Chris Mannix will have that. And also one of the voices of the Warriors, Tom Tolbert. And then in studio, hour number three, longtime friend now from Sports Illustrated, longtime executive in the NFL, Andrew Brandt's going to be here. Longtime front office exec and capologist. The Rams have an interesting choice. Apparently, Aaron Donald is waiting for more cash to be on the table, even though he told our friend Brandon Marshall on the I Am Athlete podcast it's not about money. So there's that. Oh, yes. And one player slapped another over fantasy football in Major League Baseball. That happened over the weekend. Oh, God, are we just into this story? And we're going to be way into the Jock Peterson as Chris Rock and Tommy Pham as Will Smith at a batting practice that took place in Cincinnati.
Just to clarify, you said a baseball player slapped another baseball player over fantasy football.
In the NFL, correct. Right, yeah. NFL NFL fantasy football.
Amazing.
That happened. All of this. And I cannot wait to just dive into it. It's an overreaction Monday, even though it's on a Tuesday. So that means there's some extra stuff from over the weekend. It's Celtics and Warriors, people. We'll talk about that and the Darvin Ham hiring here in Los Angeles by the Lakers on a Friday of Memorial Day weekend.
I'm going to throw this up as a poll real quick. Who's on the Lakers longer, Darvin Ham or LeBron James?
I don't know. Maybe they go out together.
Like Thelma and Louise?
Like Thelma and Louise? Going over the cliff?
Holding hands.
To wherever Bronny starts playing basketball? I don't know. We'll see. Put it up. Go for it. At Rich Eisen Show. 844-204-RICH. Number to dial here on the Tuesday, final day of May. We're back with Chris Mannix right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show. One big happy family, terrestrial radio and Peacock and Sirius XM. Our friend from Sports Illustrated, senior writer who covers the Celtics as well for NBC Sports Boston, Chris Mannix on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line now that the Celtics have made yet another NBA Finals, and this one perhaps most improbable of all back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Chris Mannix?
What's happening, Rich?
Well, I mean, a remarkable run, right, by the Celtics. How did this happen? How did this happen, best you can tell?
Well,
Chris.
I mean, look, it's been kind of a five-month evolution. I mean, I was part of the local broadcasts in November and December where they were just awful. Like, there's no two ways about it. And I distinctly recall, you know, every night kind of saying the same thing after a game where they don't play with passion. They don't play with focus. They look disorganized. They don't seem to like each other all that much. I thought rock bottom for this team was this late December loss in Minnesota where they played the Timberwolves who were without, I think, their top four guys, and they still lost to basically a minor league version of that team. That we're here now talking about the Celtics in the finals is one of the most improbable turnarounds I can remember. I mean, if you want to boil down kind of what it, what it is that got them here, it's defense. Ime Udoka, even during the dark days, was teaching them a brand of defense that they weren't used to, a switch everything type of defense that was predicated on the skill set of Marcus Smart and his ability to be a defender in the ways that previous Celtic point guards whether it's Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, couldn't be. They stuck with that. They finally got it. And from early January to now, they have been the best defensive team in the NBA by a country mile. And when you can play that type of defense, everything else is kind of just gravy, because you can beat a lot of teams by being a great defensive team.
Well, I mean, and then you could go even further back a few months, just the, you know, Udoka's hiring and Brad Stevens being kicked upstairs. We were wondering what the hell was that all about? And so is this what they had envisioned? Or, I mean, just to put in a plan that we're going to come in with this defense and turn Marcus Smart into the defensive player of the year, and that will open things up on the other end for Brown and Tatum and everyone else? Like, is this truly the manifestation of the vision when they made that surprising maneuver with Stevens and Udoka?
In some ways, I don't think they could have accurately predicted how well Marcus Smart would adapt to the point guard position. Look, there was interest within Boston, Lonzo Ball, when he was a free agent in July. They, you know, Ball just got an overwhelming offer from Chicago and never advanced past, you know, the thought stage. But there was definitely questions about whether Smart could do it. He had been an elite defensive player for years, most of his career, but he had never been a primary playmaker. So nobody really knew if he was going to be able to do that. He turned out to be great at it. You know, had one of his finest seasons and adapted incredibly well to the point guard position. But you mentioned Brad Stevens. I was critical of his decision to move to the front office, more critical, really, of the Celtics' decision to allow it. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for Brad Stevens, the coach. I thought, even despite the last couple of years being so-so, that he was still a top five, top 10, whatever you want to call it, coach in the NBA. It befuddled me why the Celtics would allow that coach to leave to take a role he had never done before. But there's no two ways about it, Rich. The Celtics wouldn't be here if Brad Stevens wasn't the GM. Danny Ainge does not make the trade that brought Al Horford to Boston with Oklahoma City. He doesn't do it because Danny Ainge does not give up an unprotected first-round pick to the Thunder in that deal. He just doesn't do it. That's not his thing. Danny Ainge, and this is not a criticism, Ainge, because this entire roster was created largely by him. Most of the top guys were brought in because of deals or draft picks that he made. But Danny Ainge doesn't make the deal that brought Derek White to Boston at the trade deadline, because you had to give up a first-round pick and a future swap right. Danny doesn't do deals like that. Brad has a different approach, looks at draft capital differently, and he made those two deals where without them, the Celtics would be dead in the water. I mean, where would they have been all season without Al Horford? Where would they have been in these playoffs without Al Horford? Where would they have been without Derek White, who turned it on really after just the second or third game in the first round and became a huge part of what this team did? Brad Stevens is as responsible for the success of this team as anyone in that organization. You know, media doesn't vote for NBA Executive of the Year, but he would have had my vote for Executive of the Year.
And then on top of it, Chris Mannix, the team they just vanquished, Pat Riley being at the top of that flow chart, his phrase that he always sticks with me is teams that successful teams need to avoid the disease of more, right? When you win a championship, you know, everyone wants more, or you're successful, everyone wants more, and not focusing on the team. And in that respect, how does Tatum and Brown avoid the disease of more? Because sometimes Tatum's the Batman and Brown's the Robin, and then they switch roles, and it's sometimes possession by possession. How do they avoid that? How does that work, that relationship?
Well, I think it's a commitment to winning first and foremost that both these guys have. And look, they're not flawless in this regard. It's kind of been a joke in recent years within members of the organization that when you get into like late December and January with these two guys, you kind of see a lot of your turn, my turn stuff as both these guys try to get on the All-Star team. Like there's definitely a competitiveness for individual accolades that exist within these two guys. But they're both extremely comfortable in their own skin. They're both extremely comfortable with their roles, and that's more of a credit to Jaylen Brown, who on a different team could probably be a Tatum type. He's never going to be the scorer that Tatum is and will be, but Jaylen Brown could, you know, on lesser teams, could certainly be the alpha. But Jaylen Brown understands what his job is within his team. He's more of a ball handler. He's still getting his shots, as we've seen all postseason. He's had, you know, rarely has he had a game where he shot less than, you know, 15 times in one. But he understands he's a playmaker, a defender, and when the Celtics need a bucket, more often than not, the ball's going to find its way into Jason Tatum's hands, and Jaylen Brown's fine with that. So when you have a star, a second star that accepts that, it makes everything easier for everybody else.
Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show, NBC Sports Boston, also senior writer from Sports Illustrated right here on the program. Now that it's Warriors and Celtics, break down the matchup for me. What are the advantages, disadvantages of this series, best you can tell?
Well, I wonder, Rich, if we look back in a couple weeks and think about what could have been if the Celtics closed out Miami in six, because they're banged up. I mean, Robert Williams is just dragging that leg up and down the floor. To his credit, I mean, the guy came back from significant knee surgery in like a month. I mean, that's not nothing. I give him a lot of credit for doing what he's doing out there. Marcus Smart, you know, alluded to this after game seven, where like the entire left side of his body is aching, whether it's his foot, his ankle, his quad that cost him a game early in the playoffs. I mean, he's in tough shape. And, you know, I know internally, you know, they wish they had those two extra days in between the conference finals ending and these finals beginning, because they could have used Saturday, Sundays to rest and not fly back to Boston late at night and fly to San Francisco today. So the health is paramount, I think, in this series. But, you know, look, if all things are equal, the Celtics match up incredibly well with Golden State. You go back to that game in March, and it's only one game, but that was when the Celtics were peaking. The defense was clicking. Tatum and Brown were playing well. They just destroyed Golden State out in San Francisco. I mean, they beat them up. And, you know, the Warriors, their offense, you know, it tries to create mismatches with all this movement and all these screens. There are no mismatches with the Celtics. The eight guys they play can all defend on some level, you know, one through five. It's just, it's remarkable. Teams, you know, I've talked to many assistant coaches about this, that, you know, the Celtics are aspirational. You want your team to be built defensively the way the Celtics are. So Boston's going to give Golden State a lot of problems. I think Golden State defense is better than people think, and they'll, you know, whether it's Wiggins or Green, they're going to give the Celtics perimeter player problems. The other variable in all this that can't be kind of accounted for right away is the fact that nobody on this Celtics roster has been to a finals, and seems like everybody on that Warriors roster has been to at least one, the key guys being, you know, three or four. And we saw 10 years ago with Oklahoma City that matters. Remember, the Thunder went into the finals. They might have been the better team with Durant, Westbrook, Harden, Ibaka, but they were steamrolled in part because they weren't quite ready for that moment. And I'm curious to see early on if the Celtics are ready for that moment, because these games one and two, you know, they're going to be hugely important in terms of setting the tone for the rest of the series.
Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so where did the decision to hire Darvin Ham come from the Lakers? What's the timeline and what's the decision process, best you can tell, for this big decision?
Yeah, the Lakers, look, they were sitting out for a while waiting to see if some of the more experienced coaches were going to shake loose. I don't know if that meant they were targeting Doc Rivers or Quinn Snyder, but they were certainly willing to wait to see how it all played out with those two coaches. Doc, of course, you know, established guy, great relationship with LeBron. Quinn Snyder has a relationship with the Lakers front office from his time coaching in South Bay with the G League team there. So that's kind of what slowed the process down. But once it became clear that those two guys weren't going anywhere, at least doesn't seem like they're going anywhere right now, you know, they turned their attention to some of the different names are out there. And Darvin Ham has been at the top of many coaching lists when it comes to the next hire for a long time now. He's kind of cutting away out of the Ime Udoka cloth, right? Like, he's a former kind of role player who, you know, didn't have a splashy career, but certainly had a better than expected one. He learned under one of the better coaches in the NBA, In Udoka's case, it was Pop. In Ham's case, it's Mike Budenholzer. He's paid his dues, and now he's kind of at that point where he's ready for the opportunity. I think the Lakers made an unbelievable hire. I mean, I think he has the potential to be a coach not only for this team in the short term, where you're trying to win a championship with LeBron and AD over the next few years, but if you go into a rebuild, Darvin Ham can be that guy too. Like, he can be that coach that develops young players to try to get you back to that level. So we can be critical, and I have been critical, of a lot of things the Lakers have done the last couple of years, the Westbrook trade, scapegoating Frank Vogel, but Darvin Ham as a coach is a total home run. I mean, that was the right guy for them to hire.
Well, and it seems, you know, our colleague Mark Stein saying that he got assurances that he gets to choose his staff, and that a regular presence in any coaches' meetings will not be Kurt Rambis. What's your reporting on all of that stuff?
I don't know. I don't know that. Like, look, I know that the Lakers with Frank Vogel effectively assembled his staff, and that did not sit well early on with Frank Vogel. He took the job, and he was successful at the job, and Jason Kidd turned out to be a terrific assistant coach, but that was a front office decision. The presence of Kurt Rambis continues to be bizarre. I don't understand it. I don't understand how much heft he has within that organization. I don't understand why, under any circumstances, he would be sitting in on a coach's meeting. So if that's the case, and I have no reason to believe it isn't, if Mark's out there saying it, it's the right decision, because you can't have an ex-coach with the ear of ownership sitting in on your coaching meetings, because it will feel like there's a spy in your midst. It just will. So I think that's the right decision, to let Darvin Ham assemble his own staff and to let the coach without having any influence from anyone anywhere else.
And does Ham's hiring give you any sense or any breadcrumbs as to how the roster is going to be massaged with what's going on with this team and the seeming difficulty it is to figure it out with the contracts of Westbrook and the injury history of Davis and the advancing age, despite his incredible play of LeBron James, and the decision to be made on that? What does the hiring tell you on the contract front?
Anything? Well, it doesn't tell me much, because unless the Lakers are willing to attach a draft pick to Russell Westbrook, he will be a Laker, you know, to start the season. It's kind of as simple as that. The teams that have discussed Westbrook trades with the Lakers, from what I'm told, have been clear about that. They're not just going to trade other distressed contracts back. They want draft capital in return. So, you know, unless something changes, and things, crazier things have happened, because, you know, teams, you know, shape their priorities after the draft and into free agency. But unless something changes, Westbrook's going to be there. Now, the rest of the roster, it could look completely different. I mean, I think the Lakers, I mean, half the roster is going to be a free agent. You know, they signed all these minimum guys last year who are now going to be a free agent. And I would expect Rob Pelinka to try to look for more modern players. I mean, they didn't have a lot of great length last year. They didn't have a lot of perimeter shooting last year. They need that. You know, you look at the teams playing in the finals, what do they have? Defensive versatility and shooting. Like, that's what you need if you're the Lakers. It doesn't grow on trees. I mean, you're going to have trouble finding these guys, but I expect the Lakers to go out and look for those types of players and just hope that something happens with Russell Westbrook and Darvin Ham and chemistry, you know, whatever, that makes it work. I'm not counting on it, but I don't think the Lakers have any viable alternative.
In the couple minutes I have left here, Chris Mannix, what is Daryl Morey thinking today in the front office of the Philadelphia 76ers? What is he thinking today, do you think?
I mean, I would assume he's still kind of consumed by how to get Harden under a reasonable contract that doesn't kill the Sixers. You know, it's got to be frustrating for Morey, for Philadelphia, to see that season end the way it did. But now he's facing a decision that will, I mean, it will define the Sixers during his era. Like, how he handles Harden moving forward and the kind of contract that he gives him will be everything. I mean, if he can find a way to get Harden on board with a Chris Paul type of contract that guarantees him a little bit more money but protects them on the back end, he'll have done his job. He'll put the Sixers in position to succeed during this Harden era, and if it has to end sooner than they want, to maybe continue to build around Embiid. But Embiid's 28 years old. These next 4 years are everything. How this contract with Harden shakes out, you know, I don't mean to be hyperbolic, but it absolutely will determine whether Embiid wins a championship in Philadelphia or if he doesn't.
And then Sean Marks, what's he thinking today in Brooklyn?
Well, do I still have Kevin Durant's phone number? I mean, I don't know if they're what the communication's been like between, you know, Sean and Kevin, and he's in a comparable situation with Kyrie. I thought his post-season comments about Kyrie were incredibly telling. You know, Sean has been nothing but supportive of Kyrie throughout this process, but him saying we need guys that are available sends a pretty strong message to Kyrie about what kind of stand that the Nets will take on his next contract. The problem they have is the same problem that Philadelphia has. If you let Kyrie walk, you can't just go sign a Kyrie-like player. And you can't waste the last good years of Kevin Durant just counting on Ben Simmons to be a star. You just can't do it. So he's between a rock and a hard place as well. He's got to get Kyrie back, but he's also got to get him on board with playing full-time, and he's got to get him at a reasonable number.
And then, you know, Simmons, is this the first ever instance of back surgery and an injury that supposedly was also mentally caused? You know, I don't – what a conundrum about with him.
I mean, look, his back was clearly a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't just voluntarily have back surgery.
Right.
So it was obviously something. But forget putting aside the mental part of it. I just find it bizarre that – the Nets were, you know, they weren't saying he was going to play, but they weren't pushing back too hard all the reporting that he was. Mm-hmm. And like, how he went from being potentially available for game four to having back surgery is wild. It's wild to me. Like, I really need kind of a TikTok on the moment Ben Simmons was traded to Brooklyn to where we are right now. Like, was his back hurt when he got there? Did the Nets know it was hurt? Did they know he was likely headed towards back surgery? I mean, were they that desperate to make a move off of James Harden to do a deal like that? It, you know, there's a lot of unknowns that I can't, you know, whenever I talk to people internally, you hear a lot of different answers up to those questions. So I don't know what the truth is when it comes to the health of Ben Simmons, but they're counting on him too. Like, he's got to come back, and he's got to be something close to the Ben Simmons of old for that team to have a chance in this conference. The Celtics aren't going anywhere. The Bucks aren't going anywhere. The Heat are going to reload. I mean, it's not going to be easy for Brooklyn next year unless they're at full strength. And even then, I don't know if you'd pick them to win at all.
So as I let you go, Chris Mannix, once the confetti drops and either the Celtics or the Warriors hoist the Larry O.B., I mean, I kind of just hit the Nets and Sixers and Lakers with you. Is there a story, an off-season story that I'm missing that you're focused on, that you're targeting?
No, I mean, you hit the broad strokes there. I mean, I'm constantly watching to see what happens with Damian Lillard up in Portland. You know, Joe Cronin, does he give Lillard a contract extension this summer that would be almost Harden-esque, where it would guarantee Lillard a whole lot of money when he's in his late 30s? He's been the face of that franchise, the greatest player in franchise history, and I still think he has some great years left in him, but they're at a crossroads as well. I mean, do they sign Lillard to that type of deal and in a way accept that making the playoffs and maybe winning a first round series is your ceiling? Or do you be bold and start to look around at potential deals that might bring back the kind of draft capital that has put Boston in this position? I mean, remember, the Celtics are here right now because they traded away Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and got the picks that eventually led to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. It took a long time, 10 years, but they got there. And I'm curious to see if Portland has that kind of mindset or evolves into that kind of mindset at some point this offseason.
Chris, thanks for the call, man. Love our chats and love your reporting and just the conversations we have. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, Rich.
Take care. Look for my call. That's Chris Mannix at SI Chris Mannix right here on the Rich Eisen Show. I follow him. You should too. You know that scene in Star Wars, A New Hope, the first one?
Episode 4, right?
Episode 4. Yeah. Where the stormtroopers stop Obi-Wan and the droids and Luke, and he tells the stormtroopers, "These are not the droids you're looking for. Let us go." And he pulls the mind trick, right?
He's on the droid Jedi
droid mind trick.
In hindsight, because again, you just heard Chris Mannix say how without that Garnett and Pierce trade, they don't have the picks to take Tatum and Brown. But what mind trick did Danny Ainge make to have the Sixers take the first pick from him? And Rich, take Fultz, and then
be careful. You guys said TJ,
and then
down,
mind trick, and then mind trick.
On a path here,
Magic and the Lakers say it's Lonzo Ball or bust.
You have no
idea. And let Tatum drop to three to have the first overall pick and say, I know who I want, but I'm going to get more picks and go down to three and get the guy who could be the MVP of the upcoming NBA Finals.
Be careful.
I'm sorry.
Be careful.
These are not the draft choices you're looking for. It's literally, now I know it's hindsight. I know it's total hindsight.
It's not hindsight, man.
It was foresight. It was at the time sight.
It was, I mean, how obvious was it?
It wasn't obvious. What do you mean?
This is the thing. Chris always gets mad when I say this. The Sixers had the third pick. Tatum was the third pick. We should have stayed at three instead of moving up for Fultz. But what Chris Mannix said, Rich, about this being important for the Sixers, it's very true. The Sixers have a history of horrible, horrible front office decisions. Like, as he was talking, I just start making a list here of, like, horrible trades, players that we gave up, like Tatum, Mikal Bridges. Like, obviously we didn't have Tatum, but we were in position to draft him.
I don't know.
I don't know if I trust this team to do the right thing, man.
Daryl Morey is a different executive.
I hope so, because the list, the laundry list of horrible, horrible decisions that this franchise has made since 1985, it's unbelievable.
Let me help you. That's not the list you're looking for.
No, I mean,
did it help?
And I told Chris, like, Tatum's rookie year. I'm like, that's a mistake that's going to haunt Sixers fans for the next 15 years. And
that's a shame. As we go to break, though, I think Ainge would have still taken Tatum first overall. I still think he would have taken him first overall.
Yeah, probably.
Probably, but the Sixers never should have
given him the chance.
To take more picks for Markelle Fultz.
And get the guy he wants anyway. And they're going to the finals. And if they win, most likely he's the one who's going to win MVP. Probably. Let's take a break. 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. Antonio Brown's in the news, too. Don't go anywhere. Back with more in a moment. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show. 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. Another story that you may have missed over the weekend, although it hit my Twitter feed, is Antonio Brown was on a broadcast for fan-controlled football and seems like he is admitting he's not going to be playing football this fall and hinted that his career may be over. This is what Antonio Brown had to say.
Is football still important to you, would you say?
Obviously, you know, we live the game, but you can't play forever. I think I'm a great player that's done everything in the game.
We going to see you playing next season?
Nah, don't play yourself looking at me to play.
So I don't know what that means, don't play yourself looking at me to play.
It seems like the one who's played himself in all of this the last few years.
Please,
him.
Please. This is so sad. I got to tell you how sad this is. I saw that soundbite and I just thought, this is the saddest. I remember interviewing Antonio Brown again on a Thursday night football. He balled out. I believe it was against the Browns years ago. May have been year one, potentially year two for him. The memory fades because it's been 12 years since the kid came off the campus of Central Michigan where he had to go to get a shot from South Florida. And this was the time when Mike Wallace, remember him? Yep. He wanted his money.
Oh, yeah.
And the Steelers were like, no.
Go to Miami.
And they paid him instead. Yeah. Because he was a kid who was not only terrific, but reliable and wanted to win and wanted to work his ass off to win. And it was obvious to everyone. 12 seasons he's played. And the first 9 in Pittsburgh were Hall of Fame worthy. That's the stuff that puts you in the Hall of Fame. You do it for the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. 7 1,000-yard seasons in 12 years. His 9 years in Pittsburgh are some of the best 9 years fresh out of the box of any receiver ever. On track to be in the Hall of Fame. But this conversation of don't play yourself to see me play, it's just like, what are you talking about? I want to see him play just because he's incredible, but none of the other stuff, like the helmet and the feet in Vegas, and then the stuff with the Patriots, and, you know, finally getting a shot. I mean, all you need to know is he could have played with Tom Brady more and took his uniform off and shirtless, skipped out of New Jersey against the Jets with his team needing him in the worst way. And that's the way he exits the stage. It couldn't be sadder. Could not be more sad when I hear that. I'm not going to sit here and say, who the hell does he think he is? Because I don't know what's going on with him. This guy could have been in Canton. And you're sitting there, he still should be in Canton. Anquan Boldin's not in Canton yet. Torrey Holt's not in Canton yet. Hines Ward deserves to get a spot in front of him. I don't think he's ever going to get a shot in Canton. And that is absolutely as sad as it comes to end hour one. And somebody, please send this to him, because he blocked me on Twitter a long time ago when I started wondering, what is his malfunction? Yeah. I mean, Facebook lived his way out of Mike Tomlin's care. Got to Vegas where Gruden wanted him in the worst way and was ready to have him and look past everything over and over again until he couldn't. And then the guy remember he celebrated his release? That was the first shirtless time we ever saw him in a viral manner. And he couldn't have been happier. And he wound up with the Patriots. And I'm sitting here thinking, some consequence he's learned of his actions.
Yeah,
that he winds up with Brady in the gold standard franchise. And then we learned about what was going on with him off the field, and then they got rid of him, and he criticizes Bob Kraft, and then Brady gives him another shot. They win a Super Bowl together, and he winds up criticizing Brady going out the door. And now he's saying, don't play yourself to see me play. I'm not playing myself. I want to see him play. I want to see him play. But not with everything else going on. And that might just be another instance of him not accepting his role in everything. Don't play yourself.
One thing you forgot to mention, Rich, before the trade to Oakland, or to the Raiders, rather.
Yeah. They were in Oakland at the time.
Yeah. He was supposed to get traded to Buffalo before they signed Diggs, and he nixed that. So he could have been a part of the Josh Allen Buffalo Bills experience.
Well, they dodged it.
Yeah, they dodged it, and they got Diggs instead. But he was originally, that's where the Steelers.
Somewhere else?
Yeah, that's where the Steelers were trying to send him.
Re-upped and stayed in Minnesota?
Yeah, they're lucky they dodged that.
Yeah.
But it gave you an indication, and still does. Will another team give him a shot? I mean,
like why?
I saw that video this weekend, and my first thought was, that is so sad. Guy could be in the Hall of Fame. Could have been in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he's going to have to buy a ticket to get in there.
Well, numbers-wise, he's a guy who should be in the Hall
of Fame.
I get it, but
so like you said, why invite him? Why invite him? That's got to be the question.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.